Greetings, Adventure Slang podcast listeners. We are here at the Adventure Slang podcast, the podcast where we speak adventure. Good day to you, Aaron.
Hello, hello, and good day to you.
I love this fall, as you know, and some people maybe listening know, I recently moved up to the Four Seasons part of the world. Yes. And still looking forward to the cold weather. The mornings are pretty chilly, but it is beautiful out today and not quite as hot as where you're at.
Yeah. It's still pretty toasty down here in the valley. But I will say that the new season, this is one of my favorite seasons. It competes with spring, I'll say. But we got Halloween coming up. You know, we mm-hmm. got just the nice general rain and cool air breezing in, changing the colors. It's really nice.
I'm right there with you. Fall is probably my favorite.
Yeah,
we get into the sports season. I'm a sports ball guy. We get into the holidays and the weather changing and all the fun stuff. So, but speaking of changes and fun stuff, what's on your mind?
Well, you know, we've been just working, doing our thing, getting a lot of progress, doing that polishing like we've mentioned before. And I'm just really excited for this new year. I'm so excited for this year to wrap up with some more play testing and some more, you know, behind the scenes tinkering. We got a convention in February. Coming up after that. When is that again?
It's February. Yeah.
February. Yeah. DungeonCon.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we'll be at DungeonCon in February, which we're getting ready for. That's definitely exciting. And then another new Avarden launch. Taking a run at that again in late spring. So this next, you know, few months have really got me excited. That's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, it's nice with this move to get that out of the way and a couple of other things early in this fall season. And then to come back as we get into the winter months to really focus for probably the next 6 months on getting things ready where we really want them. And we've got so much together now, the art, the rules system, and we have been doing our home campaign, which has given us a chance to test the intricacies of the rules on a regular basis and challenge everything, and it's really going well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So guess what? This is our 1 year anniversary of the podcast. Yay,
that's right. I know, I can hardly believe it's already been a year. It just went by so quickly. There was so much going on and we're already here.
Yeah. So our 12th podcast. So we don't produce this thing in abundance right now. It's our little informational once a month and special guest. And we have a great guest for this 1 year anniversary. Yes. Tremendously excited to bring Candace in, and Candace will be introduced here in just a moment. But I feel like with the arrival of this 1 year anniversary and this particular conversation, we reached a new milestone sort of in the development of content, the way we, you know, what we're looking at and discussing, and how the things that we're producing hopefully align with the way that the culture of gaming is developing.
Yes. Yeah, it does feel like that. It's sort of talking about more of the intricacies of what it means to sit at a table with other people and where those people come from and what it's like to find the middle ground between yourself and, you know, the many strangers we end up generally becoming, getting along with in this community.
Yeah, becoming good friends with, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Great. So let's go talk to Candace and see what they have to say.
Oh yeah, let's do that.
We are really happy to have with us the spectacular, the miraculous, the magnificent Candace. The magnificent Candace, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
We are very excited as well.
Oh yes.
Yeah, we're bringing you to our audience, the Adventure Slang podcast listeners, and let's just get right into it. One of the first things that we do like to know is your TTRPG history and when you started playing TTRPGs.
Mm-hmm. So for me, surprisingly enough, so I loved Vampire the Masquerade when I was a kid because Kindred the Embraced was on television. And I used to stay up late and just like beg my mom to let me watch it. And I found out that it was a game. So my first taste of TTRPGs was seeing those books in like Barnes and Noble and stuff and my local like comic shop and everything. And knowing that that you could play this as a game. I did not understand what that meant, but I was interested. And then I couldn't find anybody who knew how to play. So I just kind of like, it just sort of fell, you know, by the wayside. And then about 6 years ago, a friend of mine asked me if I'd be interested in doing an online game with her partner and as the GM. So like, we did like maybe a session or two, but of course scheduling just murdered it. and we had to kind of just take a backseat to that for a while. And then at work, like maybe a month or two later at work, I was talking to this guy who sat behind me, Carl. And he had a bunch of really cool toys on his desk. We started talking about pop culture. And he was like, you know what? You would be really great at role-playing games. He's like, you have really great imagination. And I was like, role-playing, is that like Vampire the Masquerade? He was like, kind of. That's like the tip of the iceberg, really. There's like a whole other world out there of it. I was like, really? I didn't know this was a thing people did. And he was like, let me show you. And then that was it, really. It was over after that. Yeah, I was just hooked. I went the first time and I was like, why haven't I been doing this all this time? I don't understand. Why didn't anyone tell me about this, that this was an option for me?
Right.
So let me back up just a little bit. So as a kid, you sort of became aware of these games. Is that right?
Yeah. Like I remember just, so Hot Topic, Hot Topic was new in my town and they had Vampire the Masquerade books, shirts, stickers, and a bunch of other like patches and stuff. Right. And my mom, I've always really liked creepy stuff. I've always been kind of a horror-y, like alt-goth leaning person. and my mom, my mom's a super horror hound as well. So one day she like picked me up from school and was like, hey, I've got something to show you. So she took me to Hot Topic and was like, look at this. Isn't this cool? And I was like, oh my God. So I had $30 and she was like, you can spend it on whatever you want. And I saw the Vampire the Masquerade book and I was like, ooh, a role-playing game. How is a book a game? And of course, like I love books. So I'm deeply intrigued by how a book could be a game. Like that seems exciting. and like my mom paged through it and saw that it was very adult and was like, well, you can't have this book. You can have anything else you want. So I bought a t-shirt actually that said Theater of the Vampires on it. And it has this very regal looking vampire on the front of it. That is clearly some kind of Toreador. and I bought some stickers and like I vowed to learn more about it. And then I met like a person at school who also had the book and was looking for someone to play with. And I remember trying to read the actual instructions and just being too young and like not getting it. And then they moved away and that was it. That was it for a long time, for years.
So then you didn't fully have that concept of what a role-playing game, how it worked.
No, I was just... Okay. All I knew is that I could be a vampire in this book game. That's all I knew.
And that's
I was
all you like, need to know.
Well, that's right? What I want. I want to be a vampire of some kind. So I'm down to play this game. But it was also like, weirdly enough, I feel like there was like a 90s resurgence of Satanic Panic. Of like that old,
I've heard that.
You know, that old school Satanic Panic where the people were like, oh, Dungeons and Dragons, whatever. I feel like there. In the 90s, they had like a little baby version of that because... like that was when like talk shows were really big and they always used to need like fodder. So I remember I came home one day and my mom was like on a tear because she was like, I watched Sally, Jesse, Raphael. And I saw these children that file their teeth down to sharp points because they think they're vampires. That's not happening to you. You're not a vampire. I know that you think that's cool. I'm like, mom, I'm not going to do that. That's ridiculous. Like, why would you think I would do that? But she was just like convinced. She's like, I know you think teens are cool, Candace, which I really did. I thought teens were so cool until I was one.
Of course.
But yeah, I don't know. I wish that I had gotten involved sooner than that. And like, granted, I was in theater at that time. So I probably wouldn't have had the most time to do TTRPGs back then because I was in band, I was in chorus, like I was that over-involved junior high and high schooler that did too many things.
You didn't have time for TTRPGs because you were LARPing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's great.
Yes, 100%. And now I'm like, oh, I can do it and not have to be outside? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I would like that.
So when did you get to play? Have you played Vampyr at this point?
I still have not played a single game.
Oh,
I had a game.
No.
Yeah, I had a game on the books, and I was really excited. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to do it. I got really excited, but then the person that was organizing it, unfortunately, had some health issues, and I was like, oh man, like, your health comes first, like, please. So they were like, oh, do you mind if, like, I back up? I'm so sorry. And, you know, I was like, please don't be sorry. Like, health comes first. This is a game. I can play this anytime. So I'm sure I'll get another opportunity eventually, especially with all the amazing people that are running it in this community.
Right.
I don't know what clan I'd be from these days. I mean, I've been swearing my whole life that I'm, you know, a Toreador, through and through. Like, that very kind of...
I get that.
That, like, debaucherous, fancy vibe is totally up my alley.
You know, I think it's really interesting, honestly, because I feel like Vampyr, I just want to say really quick before I get into this, because I've actually been studying a lot of it. I'm playing in a game this upcoming Friday. But anyway.
Ah, awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. But so I feel like Vampyr the Masquerade is one of those games that has this, like, quiet, incredibly dedicated following that has slowly been building this world over time. And I feel like, though, as prolific as it's become, I haven't met anybody who actually started with it and was, like, their main focus until now.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like a lot of people put it down as well.
Yeah,
like, maybe they were cool with it, and then they were like, they backed up a little bit, and now they're back, you know? And it's like, it's exciting to see.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, it's always been, like, in the periphery of my sort of RPG lens, but lately it's come to the center. So you think a Toreador, I could totally see that. For a while, that's not the same for myself, but I don't know, it's hard to decide. I feel like at the end of the day, I would still be in that boat as well, but I don't know.
I'd have to, like, really think about it.
Yeah.
You all might be interested to know that there is a documentary on Vampyr the Masquerade called World of Darkness.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cool. I will watch that.
2017. So yeah, take a look at that. I feel like Vampyr the Masquerade is a game that is, not only is it a tabletop role-playing game, but it has, in fact, may have come out of LARPing.
I think it was originally written as a LARPing game.
Okay.
And then they sort of adapted a tabletop hybrid version. So for instance, actually in the latest edition does have, like, LARP rules in the beginning of it.
That's so cool. The other day I can't remember where I was. I was online. I feel like it might've been at that D'Angelo. I know he runs some Vampyr sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think that he was, like, out somewhere. Like, was it him? Anyway, someone that I follow that may or may not be D'Angelo was at a store and bought, they were like, oh my gosh, look at this. I'm totally going to get it. And I'm going to learn how to run this. And it was the copy of Vampyr the Masquerade that, like, I remember wanting to buy at Hot Topic that my friend had, right? I'm, like, looking at it. It's the green cover that's marbly looking. And has the rose on it. So I'm like, you already run Vampyr the Masquerade. What do you mean that you're looking forward to running this one? And then, like, I had to take a moment and just be like, Candace, Dungeons and Dragons doesn't just come in 5e, honey. Like, there's so many versions of these games.
True. That's
I have true. Two different versions of Savage Worlds rulebooks in my house at this moment. But for for a good hour, I was just like, what could he mean by running this? I felt so silly after. I was like, oh, duh.
You know, I think that was D'Angelo. I think I remember seeing that.
Right? Yeah. As well. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like, well, run that version for me, because that's the version of my dreams that I've always wanted to play. So, and I still have my shirt. So I'm ready.
For the record, by the way, I am playing La Sombra. Ooh. I just remembered. Yeah, this Friday, which it will be interesting. And I think that green covered edition was the same one that we played.
So exciting.
You and I, Dad, is on a one shot.
Oh, with when Alec at our little home mini convention. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had a mini convention at my house.
Ooh.
How many people did we have there? Almost a dozen.
Something like that. Yeah. It was a good little turnout.
And we just played over the weekend. The living room was just two dining tables put together, and we had a schedule, and different people ran different things. It was awesome. I want to do it again.
Great. But,
that sounds fantastic.
That's really cool.
Because you know everyone's going to be cool too. So you don't have to worry about, like, ponying up to a table where everyone's like a complete stranger.
Oh yeah.
That's so exciting.
Although I will say, I don't, have you been to many conventions, Candace?
So I've never been to a gaming convention. I'm about to go to PAX U in December.
Nice. It was
my first. I've been to two comic conventions. I went to Comic Con, like the big one. I started with that. That was a poor choice on my part. And then I went to MegaCon after that in Orlando. So I'm a little bit of a baby when it comes to conventions, but they're deeply exciting.
They're fantastic. I love them so much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we went to RageCon in Reno last year, and we are heading to DundraCon in the Bay Area in February. And that was the first convention that I went to. So I'm glad to be back there, going back there. But we're going back there as Adventure Sling.
Full circle.
Rep Newvarden. Yeah, right. Very much so. So I do want to know then, what did you play first? What role-playing game did you start with?
So, I mean, I started with D&D, really. The first game that was online only with my long-distance friends, with my best friend and her partner, that was a homebrew. It was like a Wild West D&D that we were doing, kind of like a space western. But that only lasted, like I said, a couple of rounds. And then when I was at work, Carl was like, oh, here's this guy named Will, who he'd worked in a different department. And he was like, oh, he really wants to run a game. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll try it. So he kind of ran like the basic, like, you know, the baby's first D&D where you have like, this is a ranger elf. Like, this is a dwarf with a hammer. Like that
version. Right.
Yeah. So we did that. And there was a player that was just terrible and ruined everything and made the DM like want to jump off a cliff. and I think Carl kind of saw that it was falling apart quickly. We lasted maybe two sessions. And then like Will had a baby. So like there were some things in the works that kind of made it difficult for him to keep running the game. So we kind of put that on pause and Carl ran Savage Worlds. Carl is, he actually has a company, that's an ACE licensee for them. So he has a close relationship with Pinnacle and we were able to play some East Texas University, which is like Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets Scooby-Doo kind of thing, or Supernatural, and I had such a great time. I did not expect that at all. I knew that I was going to like it just based on, you know, the role-playing element of it and, you know, the improv, but I wasn't sure how I was going to feel occupying the headspace of a character that was so different from me. Like, I set out to make a very, very kind of unusual character. In one of the sessions I had played, I had guessed something that the GM was trying to do that was really cool. And I kind of like broke his system and I felt really bad because he didn't have like a backup plan. And I just felt like a giant jerk. So I was like, I don't want to do that again. I'm going to play a head empty character and that's going to fix the problem. So I played this character that was like a cheerleader and a party girl and just didn't like know anything ever and had to roll like vigor checks before I did anything to make sure I wasn't too drunk or like wasted from the night before. Like it was just like, I played this like very like over the top, questiony, like every sentence is a question, type of person.
Nice.
Yeah. And, I was like, this is going to be really difficult. And it was at first. But I think that's when I was sold because like we went, I think the second or third episode, we like all went to a party and, like, obviously, I couldn't resist having drinks and stuff and getting crazy. But then a monster came and he was like, the GM was like, you know, Carl was like, how are you going to deal with this? And I was like, well, I mean, I'm drunk. He's like, well, roll your vigor. And I passed my vigor check and he's like, do what you want. Like, I'll give you +2 since you're trashed. I was like, okay. So I like jumped through like a second floor window and like did like a flying kick into this like jello blob and like smashed it to bits. And it was awesome. It was so cool.
That's amazing.
I didn't think I was going to be so like gratified by the combat. I thought it was going to be like all about the RP, but the combat was so fun. Like it was intoxicating. You get such a sense of accomplishment, whether you are, you know, defeating a monster with words or with your fists, you know? And I think that's really what I love the most is that like, you can tell such dynamic stories depending on the table that you have in front of you and how willing your participants are. And like so many people are very, very willing to just go on whatever ride you want to put them on as long as you're clear beforehand what will and will not be on the ride, you know? So like it's just like such a magical and honestly like it's the most amount of magic that's like the simplest thing in the world. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I don't know. I'm so charmed by it.
Yeah. That is the thing about these games is that, because it's all imagination and it's limitless, all we need is, we just need the right environment. Like you said, it's much different. Of course, when I grew up in, you know, when role-playing games were that in the '80s, they were taboo and they were fringe and all that kind of stuff. So we were all just a few people hanging out together. Nobody thought about anything hazardous as far as like themes or what we were going to talk about or anything like that. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Socially, it was much different time, but also with the high profile thing that technology has done for these games and bringing it forward. It is a very realistic and important aspect of the game when people are coming together that don't know each other all that well to know what the parameters are.
Absolutely.
And from all kinds of places, you know, just with all kinds of different backgrounds and experiences.
Yeah.
You know, even the people that you grow up with have like a relatively similar culture.
Yeah.
Online, it could be, you know, anybody.
I totally feel that. I've run into some moments where I've had to explain my POV to people and kind of discuss how my experience differs from theirs and why context matters, right? That's something I think a lot of people kind of take for granted. And that's why safety tools, you know, are so indispensable because, you know, when you have a situation where, you know, you make a mistake, you at least have those notes to compare against, right? Like before you say something, you can look at the lines and veils of your table and the needs of your players as a GM, you know, and, or even as a player, you can look at, you know, what lines not to cross and what veils other people have right at the table so that you don't offend anybody. Right. And, cause I feel like life is just like that. You know, I had a moment, over the summer I ran, a 4-part series of Thirsty Sword Lesbians, as one shots for June. And I did the first session and the last session. And then I was a player in the 2 sessions in the middle. And, there was one that was like really prolific, like April Kit Walsh, the author of Thirsty Sword Lesbians, was our GM. Like I couldn't believe she had said yes when I asked her, like I was just done, just fanboying all over myself, like, ee! I'm at the table and I said something, I made like a joke that was like, just an offhanded joke that like someone had said something to me once that was, I worked with a boy once upon a time who is the most ridiculous and excessive conspiracy theorist. And there was something that he had said that was just crazy that I just never thought was like, could ever offend anybody because it would just seem so over the top. And I certainly was not raised with any slurs in my home, right? Like I'm black, so I do not come from a family where like any kind of prejudice or racism or bigotry is tolerated in any form. There were a lot of slurs that I had never heard growing up that I had to like learn as an adult because people would say, this is a problem. And then I'd have to understand, like, you know, why is this a problem? Where does it come from, et cetera? And I'm at this table and I make this joke and I'm thinking it's like totally innocent, right? I'm like, you know, this is so silly, but not realizing that the history of what I said had anti-Semitic roots. And like, everything's fine, but I get like a little, you know, like voice in my earpiece, like, hey, someone just said that that's anti-Semitic and they're having a hard time with it in chat. And like my heart stopped, like I froze. Like we had copious, you know, safety tools, like in effect. And I had somehow still managed to mess up. And I was just like, it was a moment that I didn't know what to do. Like my blood ran cold. And I was so crushed because that is absolutely not me at all. Right. Like that wasn't what I was trying to go for. I had no idea. Like it was mortifying. And, so we came back from break and I just immediately addressed it because I was like, that's the only thing to do here. Like I hurt somebody and I did not mean to hurt somebody. Like I need to apologize and make this right away. And it was horrible and terrifying. And that person was super cool about it, right? The chat, like we had a conversation about why it was anti-Semitic. Everybody learned. It was a teaching moment for every single person there. Only like one or two other people on screen had actually, you know, thought that maybe that might be anti-Semitic, but they weren't sure. So like all of us had like this big confirmation. It was really good. It was a very positive experience in the end, but leading up to that, like I was a wreck. And then even after we had it, I had to like excuse myself. Like I went and cried for like, I cried for like 10 minutes and then I had to like fix my makeup and come back on screen. Like it was really awful. I don't regret it because like, it was something that needed to happen so that I will never make that mistake again. Like I'm thankful for the lesson. but it was mortifying and it was terrible. And like that person was like, I'm sure that's not what you meant. I just wanted to tell you that that's how other people have used it. And like, it was so nice that someone wasn't just assuming that I was like trying to be terrible. Right. Because it's really easy to just assume someone's being awful. And that's what I'm saying. Like, safety tools are so important because like, you already are saying these things are not going to be in here. So people at your table and the people watching you, right? And like you said, this new age of technology where you have to learn how other people feel and what other people go through and what other people's experiences are. Like, I've been to more bat mitzvahs than I can count, bat and bar mitzvahs. The area that I'm from in Pennsylvania is very, very Jewish, in Bucks County. And like, I've grown up with the utmost respect for Jewish people. So it was good to know that that's a problem, right? That that's something that's not good. And it wasn't something that would have been in our lines and veils, right? It wouldn't have been part of the safety tools, that one specific example, because it is kind of, you know, something that I guess like a lot of people weren't aware of and should be. So like, I love that because, you know, your audience can also kind of say, hey, I need you to do better. Or, hey, I need you to, you know, think about what you're saying differently, or, you know what I mean? And to me, that's like all growth, whether it's just you as a person or you and your community. Like, feedback to me is just like so important, because that's how you're able to, you know, continue to keep this a safe space, because telling stories, that's so personal. You know, it involves like, you put your whole heart and your whole like soul and your mind and your thoughts and your principles into it. And you want to make sure that you're not being misread or misheard. You know what I mean? Whether that's by people who are doing it intentionally or unintentionally.
You know, language is so tricky. The English language in particular, being, you know, parts of other languages throughout a very long history.
Yeah.
And there are so many turns of phrase and histories and meanings and things that probably we're still not aware of, some of them, what they mean, where they come from. And we hear also ones that I know I do all the time that I am aware of that people use very commonly. And I think what I'm hopeful is through all of this, that public role-playing games and storytelling and communication and language and things like that, when we do make a mistake, I'm hoping that it helps the culture in its entirety, not just role-playing games, but people overall. To handle and address these sorts of things together.
Yeah.
And I've got cancel culture over here on my periphery. You know what I'm saying? It's like flopping over here in my eye saying this is not, cancel culture perhaps is not the way to handle something when someone makes a mistake, as long as they are open to recognizing it, accepting the responsibility and the willingness to learn.
Yeah.
And I think that early on in RPGs, there were a couple of things of high profile that ended people's careers. Maybe rightfully so, but it's still a borderline that I don't think that cancel culture is a direction that we necessarily need to go when we are approaching this environment with a genuine sense of just to share and not meaning, you know, we're not being aggressive, we're not meaning, not doing anything intentionally.
Yeah,
I just wanted to say that, you know, because it's something that's always on my mind out there as I watch people communicate. And I see people say things I would never say live just because I don't know where that's going to go.
Yeah, I think like, so for me, cancel culture is something that I think like, obviously it's loaded, right? But I think sometimes accountability, you know, there's no one way accountability looks, right? I think like right now we have somebody that's trying to come back into the community that people are like, has it been long enough for this person to like really do the work and consider like what has happened, what emotions and negative impacts that they've had on people, you know, how those victims essentially, right, survivors of this violence or this, you know, this this physical or, you know, mental stress that someone's put on them, right? Like how those people feel. Like, is it really about this person or is it about the like really making amends, right? And I think that that's something that kind of is necessary. Like I've seen a lot of times people get very easily forgiven for things, or someone will just try to write something off as like, oh yeah, it's no big deal. Like, you know, it was creative differences, or, oh, well, you know, we just had a fight, or, oh, well, you know, it was no big deal, but like something bad happened. Right. And that needs to be addressed. And when one party is kind of just like shrug, right, and doesn't change, all that means is that there's new people that are going to be messed with, right? There are new people that are going to take the roles of the people that person hurt before, right, and fill those roles with like new bodies, and that those people might go through it. I mean, granted, the person might learn, they might be better, they might move on, right? But if they face no consequences for their actions, right, and the negativity that they've allowed to kind of foster, then they're not going to learn from their mistakes, right? They have no reason to. They're still able to kind of exist and go on about their day and, you know, have a nice life. So I don't think that it's cool to like ruin someone's livelihood, right? I don't think it's cool to like try to like, you know, nail somebody to the ground. But I do believe that sending a message is important, and it's a very strong way to kind of like stand, like take a stand. You know what I mean? And I think that when someone is unwilling to kind of like make, like bridge that gap and take that time and really think about like what happened, you know, think about, you know, was that not my intention? Like that's why it was, you know, it was easy for me. It was a no brainer for me to face that, you know, that complaint or that concern that somebody had about what I had said head on, because that wasn't my intention, right? I'm not going to sit here and say, well, I'm sorry it offended you. No, it was offensive. I did not know it was offensive, but it was offensive, right? I'm not going to try and sugarcoat what I said and try to be like, oh, you know, whatever. I can be honest and say I didn't know. And I can, you know, consider myself educated and make sure I never do it again. But like that person still hurt, right? So I can't like just go, well, you know, so like I totally hear you though. I think that sometimes people are overly cautious because cancel culture looms and they're like, oh, I don't know what to do. To me, it's all about communication. Like I've had people come to me and ask me, you know, Candace, I've done this research, and then bring me the research, right? And then ask me for my opinion as a queer person, as a non-binary person, as a Black person, right? What do you think of this? Now that I've done this research, I would like your perspective. I've also had people just come to me and be like, I'll do the research later, but what's your perspective? I can tell you with like all my heart, the people who come to you with all the information and that have actually done the work, and then ask you the question, that stays with that person. The person who just asks you for the simple answer, it's in one ear and out the other a lot of times. And I think in this, like they're not getting anything out of it, right? Like,
well, no, they expect you to educate them.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And like, I hate it when there's the acknowledgement of, well, I'm going to do the work. Okay, well then do that and then come back to me, right?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your part.
You know what then, I mean? So like we could all have a better time. Just because again, like one of the biggest gifts and blessings to me in this industry is how different all of us are, right? How many stories there are to tell, and how there's no right way to tell the story, right? Like everybody's doing such really like amazing and inventive things, imaginative things. Like I remember watching you all play Nuevorden and being like, this is the most chill and calm and zen game I've ever seen in my life. Like it was such a different and unique vibe that I just was really captured by. Even the other day I ran Masks on Insight Check's channel. And I had a player, Jen, also known as Youngles. She's half Korean. And she brought her Korean heritage to the game, right? Like she had some little moments where, you know, she was in the cafeteria, she was a little nervous about her food, or she, you know, she played a character who had a mentor who was her grandmother, right? Who like passed down, you know, this skill, you know, throughout generations. Like there was a whole, you know, history of her family, you know, dating all the way back to being in Korea that had these powers, right? And, you know, her training and stuff was very like, very much indicative of, you know, her culture. And I love moments like that when people like really like bring their own perspectives and their own stories and their own cultures and their own experiences to the table, because it makes the story that much richer, right? It's not just another comic book story about, you know, Peter Parker is a white kid with brown hair and blue eyes and he gets bit by a spider and, oh no, I'm Spider-Man. And then I swing around and I have this girlfriend, right? That's fun and that's wonderful. But when you get a new take on that, that's totally different, that kind of, you know, keeps that same feeling, but involves like a whole new world to you. Like that's so much more valuable to me. And I think to make room for those moments to happen, you know, at the table, we also have to take the responsibility and do the work to understand the people who are going to be telling those stories. And I think without that, you know, there's a lack of trust. You know, if I can't trust that I can tell this story at someone's table, I'm not going to tell it, right? Or I'm going to try to tell it and it's going to be a bad experience. And then I'm going to feel really resentful after that I even extended myself. You know what I mean?
That,
so
that is the be all end all of the importance of safety at the table, because this is a place for us to tell our stories, and the us gatekeepers who think that their version is the version.
Yes.
Are a hazard.
Yeah, absolutely.
It makes me think of, I don't know how to say her name very well. Chimamanda Ngozi, I think
Adichie.
Danger of a single story.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Which is a beautiful discussion. I use it in teaching. my colleagues, everybody in the English department in the world has used it at some point. But the value of that message is that when we think we know the story of someone else based on typically stereotypes, we know nothing.
Absolutely.
And these story opportunities are the chance for us all to share our unique stories. And it's the way fiction works as well. You know, people who read fiction are more empathetic people by nature because they understand other perspectives than the assumptions around them might indicate.
Like that's so important too when you're dealing with, like, you know, I've told stories and I've been a part of stories where there are toxic relationships, right? Where there is, you know, a personal monster rather than a monster that's like under your bed kind of thing, right? Where in the game where I was, you know, a dumb cheerleader, there was a character that was a player character that died when the person, because we used to play at work for a while, so that person left the job, right? He quit, and we still wanted to play at work, so his character kind of died off in the game, and you know, we sort of pivoted, and then like maybe a year later, he came back as like the undead or a vampire or something like that.
Nice.
And it was really funny, but like, you know, I had a conversation with my GM because like I was with someone in college that was abusive, right? Like they were they used to wait outside my apartment sometimes, and it was just generally a scary situation. And like that's not something, I mean, even just inviting people other than cis men to the table, right? Not saying that cis men can't have, you know, trauma, obviously. Anybody and everybody can have trauma. But I think thinking outside of oneself helps to kind of open those gates a lot wider and invite more people in, and then also kind of drive up that awareness, right? And have that kind of discussion of, you know, like what's safe for someone. Like what's safe for me might not be safe for someone else. Like I'm in a bunch of scary games for Halloween, and I can't tell you how extensive and exhaustive some of the safety lines and veils are for these games.
Sure.
Because it's Halloween, right? So everything's like really creepy, and everyone knows that like people are gonna be going real hard this month. So it's like, listen, Igor is fine, okay? You can do eye stuff, but you can't talk about it too long. Maximum 5 seconds of eye stuff talking, okay? no extended scenes of eye stuff. You know what I mean? Like really specific, very detailed accounts of things that I just like people cannot deal with, right?
Body horror,
And like, I just think it's so like, it's charming to me, to hear all of that, because again, like I'm at a table with like four completely new people I have never met in one day in my life. I've never had a conversation with them. I've never seen them before, but by the end of the call, we're like vibing on how gross it is when things have tiny holes and stuff crawls out of them. Right.
Right.
And now we are bonded and forged in fire, and we will never be apart. Right. So like, it just has so much power. TTRPGs can like, I mean, honestly, they can change the world. Like I really admire people that like use it for like mental health reasons as well. And like, oh, just so beautiful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's something that I have sort of a vested interest in with, you know, the broader applications of the RPG, you know, because it's a powerful tool, and it can be used to do a lot of really awesome things. And like you said earlier, having that accountability and trusting, being able to trust that accountability in the people you're playing with, you know, is a critical aspect of creating the safer environment for us to do, you know, for us to partake in that magic, I guess.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. It's so essential to have very clear lines. And I also really enjoy the fact that like so many games now are coming out too that are less combat focused. I have no problem with combat focused games. I love combat. I think it's great. But I also really like games that kind of insist that you be more thoughtful and more purposeful with your actions. And it kind of you know, encourages people to play more with their hearts and their heads than just like, you know, smash, you know. Right. I mean, smashing stuff is great. Love being a half work barbarian. That's like the best time ever, right? But also when you're like, you know, across from somebody and like you're having like a moment, right? You're having a scene. I recently played Kids on Bikes where it was just like a giant queer drama fest of junior high school students. And every moment was just like heart-wrenching. Like every glance was like a knife, you know. It was really just very dramatic and wonderful. And like that was not something that I thought I needed before I started playing that game. And by the end of the game, I was like, can we go back? Can we do one more round? I know it was a one shot, but I need just one more session. Like
let's talk about cis men for a minute.
Sure.
Because traditionally the culture for cis men is rough, tumble, you know, we know the stereotypes and mm-hmm. they're very accurate. And I think that the RPG Nouveau, mm-hmm. where the embrace of the role play is very broad and it goes places mm-hmm. that are truly emotional and things like that. Picking on the gatekeepers, that's a danger zone. Yep. If we think of the gatekeepers typically as cis white men who are afraid of those emotions, maybe they wouldn't say afraid, but uncomfortable.
Sure.
Expressing in that way.
Yeah.
And it's sad because it misses a whole level of engagement that makes the experience that much more memorable.
Agree. Yeah. And it can be such a powerful tool for learning. Again, like, I mean, we just said this about different cultures. The same goes for different genders, right? Like, it's such a powerful tool, you know, to try to understand other people that are unlike you in any way, right? And I think, like, the places where I felt most welcome, like my GM Carl, like he's a cis straight white man. His mom is Mexican, but like for all intents and purposes, he's like, I'm a white guy, right? That's how he presents to the world. That's how people treat him. And I think for him, like, it's not something that he's, you know, like excited by, right? That's not like the purpose of his life, which I don't think it really is for many cis white dudes. But I think that like it can be hard to examine the privilege, the inherent privilege that kind of comes with that, especially when you don't feel it, right? Like if you are a blue collar worker or you're the lower end of white collar, right? You don't feel, you know, super powerful. You don't feel, you know, like rich and fancy, like you have so many privileges in life, right? The things that are your privileges are things that, you know, you don't realize are a privilege because you're not seeing other people have to struggle, right?
Right.
Like you just know that from where you're sitting, you also struggle. But like everybody has privileges, right? Like I've, you know, the fact that I have a really great setup, I had the money to purchase, you know, a full green screen with, you know, lights and, you know what I mean? Like it's not a fancy one. It's like a bullshit Amazon one. pardon me for my swearing.
but we speak French on this channel occasionally.
I feel like, you know, that's still privilege, right? Like having the money to do that and have a good mic, right? That's a privilege. Like being able to, you know, afford a Zoom subscription, like that's a privilege. Like this is an expensive, it can be a cost prohibitive industry to be in. So like what I really like is that people that are, you know, not cis men, not cis white dudes, are out there trying to like make subtle changes and bring people, like-minded people along with us that might be, you know, cis straight white dudes, right? We, you know, like I love an ally, like a true ally, like there is nothing like an ally in the world, right? Because you know that you're going to be able to get shit done. You have somebody that can speak on your behalf if someone isn't listening to you. I tend to lean into those relationships as much as I can if the person is being real, you know? Right. And I very much think that one of the reasons we've been able to make such strides are people, you know, like my friend Carl, right? Like he saw me like a queer, non-binary black woman that, you know, was like brand new at his ad agency, right? He had no reason to invite me to a game out of nowhere, but he wanted to be open. He wanted to be inclusive. He saw something in the way that I talked, in the way that, you know, the passion that I had for pop culture, and was like, I would like to get you in front of a game. it takes that kind of like reaching out, right, to, I think, truly like open up these spaces. And I love that now we have, you know, other leaders in this space, and even like smaller companies, right? You have smaller companies that are putting out, you know, like you said, Ty, more kind of emotion-driven content and things like that. And, you know, straight cis dudes are invited to play, right? Come in.
Right.
Come chill. Like, come play Thirsty for Lesbians, right? Like, have a good time. Because I think, you know, when those moments occur, that's when you can start understanding the privilege, right? Like, I remember being at a table and being really, like, freaked out about, you know, my connection. And then seeing somebody else on that same call who had it way worse than me and having to be like, oh, you need to stop complaining. You actually look pretty good. Shut up, right? Like, it could be worse. You could be struggling like this person who has no internet right now. Like, be quiet, right? Your life isn't that bad. These are first world problems. So I don't know. I think it goes both ways. Like, you get so much perspective, but only if you're open to it. You know, there are plenty of people who just want to kind of exist in the bubble that they live in. And I get it. Like, it's tempting. It's tempting to not leave that bubble because that bubble is safe, right? It's the way things have always been done.
Well, in light of that, I want to put this out there because I think it's very valuable. Hopefully it's valuable for our listeners now or in the future if they find these discussions. Allyship, this just occurred to me. And I know that the political term of allyship means a specific thing. But there, I think that there's also an allyship for that's available for cis white people to broaden their horizons if they feel safe that they can meet more people that maybe in the past they are not haven't been comfortable doing so and finding friends that will introduce them to more friends who are not like them.
Right.
Because I would say that's probably one of the most intimidating aspects of being a white person in today's culture is I'm guessing being a white person in today's culture that being afraid of rejection or being accused of something despite your good intentions.
Absolutely. And I think, again, like going back to cancel culture, right? Sometimes it's brutal. Sometimes justice is swift and people just jump to a conclusion and it's over, right? But I also think that being humbled by the fact that someone is calling you out for having a different understanding of their experience, because that's essentially what happened to me, right? Like, I'm not Jewish. So, like, that person was totally right to say that. You know what I mean? Even if I had been Jewish, I hope that they would still call me out because that bothered them, you know, and other people need to know that, you know, what I said in jest, thinking it was totally innocuous, in reality has consequences, right, for people. And I think that being able to kind of just admit when someone is wrong, right? Admit when you're wrong. Like, admit that, like, yeah, you know, like I take the L, right? I fucked up.
Right.
Like, this is embarrassing. I screwed up. I should have. I mean, same thing with like misgendering, right? I know so many people who like, I mean, they get kept up at night trying to figure out pronouns, right? They're like sweating bullets. But like my mom, for example, right? She knows that I use they, she pronouns. She understands where I'm coming from. She has watched me grow up, right? She knows, she saw all of this in the making, right? Before I knew, she pretty much knew. And she has a hard time, right? Like sometimes like she'll, you know, she'll say she too much when referring to me and be like, oh, excuse me, I need to say them as well. Like, I know that I need to say they, them and she, her, I need to use both because you have both and I need to use it. But like, I'm not like, how dare you, right? Because my mom is trying, like she's making an effort. Right. And I think that's there's like, that really changes things, right? Like not everyone's going to be perfect, no matter what it is, whether it's pronouns, whether it's uncomfortable conversations about race, whether it's uncomfortable conversations about misogyny, right? I was in a production.
Socioeconomics.
Yeah, of this is what I'm saying. I mean, any situation. Like, I was in a production that was mostly AFAB people of Mothership, and while I was in that, like, you know, there was kind of like this idea of, you know, we should make this a matriarchy. Like, how about we have this different world? And our DM was a very understanding person. Who was kind of like, you know, what do you think about this? Like, can we toss this ball around? And the other AFAB people and myself were kind of like, listen, this is kind of, you know, a moot point because we come from a patriarchy that has shaped our entire world, right? We don't know what that's like. We can't posit what that might be like by just swapping women for men, right? Oh, now sudden women are in charge. Okay, well, is there still capitalism? Yes, because capitalism is kind of anti-woman, right? So like, you know, there's, you can't just flip one for the other, right? You can't just go, well, we're chocolate now, we're doing vanilla. Like, it's not that easy. you have to kind of dismantle the whole thing and then rebuild all of it. So making this kind of more feminist and feminist friendly universe was a very, was a much longer conversation, I think, than he had expected. And, you know, when we kind of expressed our hesitation, he backed off. He was like, oh, okay, you know what? Like, let me hear you, because, you know, it's not, for me, it would be a really fun project, but for you at the end, you're still in a patriarchy. Like, you're going to spend all this time with me dreaming of this wonderful, amazing feature that you're never going to get to have. And all of us are like, correct. That's why we don't want to do it. Because for us, it is a pain and it's sad and it's terrible. And it makes us examine our world in a way that perhaps we are not comfortable doing on a Tuesday afternoon. So it was, yeah, like, it was really nice to just have somebody go, oh, okay. And then get why we didn't want to talk about it, rather than being like, rather than inflaming the situation. And to me, I think, like, if somebody is actually sorry, right? Like, if somebody has messed up and they want to be better, especially in this industry, right? Where, like, things are happening all of the time, right? The internet has a very long memory, but it also has a very short one in a lot of ways. So I think, like, within this community, actions really do speak louder than words, right? Is this person, you know, showing that they are sorry? Are they showing that they are making strides? Are they showing that they're doing better? Because again, like, I mean, I've been the token player before, right? I've been the inclusive hire. I know that I'm not there because I am inclusive. I just happen to be, and that works for the showrunner, right? That works for the person who's in charge. Like, I, you know, I try to bring, you know, my best A game whenever I show up at any table. And that's what, you know, anybody who hires me knows I'm going to do, right? Like, I'm going to come and I'm going to be prepared and it's going to be great. And I'm going to do my damnedest to, like, make this the best show. And, like, I have a lot of faith and confidence in that. But I think, like, for other Black people in the space, and for other, you know, people of color in the space, you don't always know that, right? You might show up and it's clear that you're the diversity hire and the person doesn't even expect you to talk, right? They don't even expect you to contribute. They don't, you know, or like, you're the only trans person. It's all a bunch of fucking straight people. And they're like, oh, you just wanted some flavor. You know what I mean? Like, right. And you're just like, my, you know, trans non-binary identity is not for you. You know what I mean? Like, it's not for you to use. You know what I mean? Like, this is my being. So like, if you could just, you know, not like make this weird, you know what I mean? Or even a table. Yeah, like, or even a table when, like, a straight player shows up and just assumes that there's going to be straight romance at the table because they are straight and that's their purview. And then there's a queer romance at the table and they're like, wait, what? Right. Like, why would that be any different than any other romance, right? Like, you, like, people shouldn't treat that as a different romance. It's just what that other character is, you know, that other player character wants and what they want to do and what, you know, you should be supportive of that and not be like, what? I don't understand. So I think that, like, you know, like you both have said, like, it really opens people up to things outside of themselves, especially because, like, you know, technology has made it so that you can game with literally anybody. I game regularly with somebody who lives in Iceland. Yeah. Like, totally random, right? But, like, she lives in Iceland and, like, we have a blast. She stays up crazy late to role play with us. It's really
that's
good.
Great.
Yeah. And I get, like, that whole other perspective from a completely different country, right? That I wouldn't otherwise have in my life. So even just on, you know, a scale like that, let alone people stateside, if you're in the Midwest, right, where it's a red state, everybody believes kind of the same thing. You've never really met a gay person. You've never really met a trans person. You've never met a Black person, right? Those insulated communities are absolutely, absolutely still a thing, right? And this is a way that people can kind of, like, open up and understand way more than just themselves. And I find that that's so important for me. Like, I have a lot of differences from a cis, straight, white man, right? There's lots of differences. I could not be more different, I don't think. but like, it helps me to understand someone who is straight and cis and white and a man, right? Like, it really helps me understand that perspective. It might not be one that I have, but I'd like to understand where they're coming from. So that if I need to say something or I want to befriend somebody or if I'm trying to explain something to someone, I at least can understand their purview enough to speak to them in a way that's going to be effective rather than combative.
Right. In a word, it's education. I mean, we're talking about education.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. And like, I can think of no other, you know, gaming situation. I mean, video games for sure. Video games have come very far. There's all kinds of stories that are being told in video games now too. But those tend to be experiences that you share with yourself, right? Rather than with an entire table of people and the community that's watching you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point.
like having people get at me after a game and be like, hey, like I played a character in a Thirsty Sword Lesbians game once for a charity stream that was kind of was definitely neurodiverse. Like I went into the game thinking that I have a sibling that has Asperger's. So I was like, you know, I want to do some representation for that. Like, I understand what this is like. And I feel like disabilities aren't something that people really kind of take into games or, you know, any kind of like neurodiversity. It's not something that's necessarily always kind of on the forefront of people's thoughts. And another player at the table picked up on it. And like, I wasn't trying to do anything over the top or anything. It was just for me. It was like a little note to myself, like, this is who this character is, right? Like, this is how you're going to play them. And one of the other players picked up on it and was like, hey, that representation like gave me so much life. And I was like, what? Like, it didn't occur to me that this person would see that at all. I thought it was just like in my head, you know what I mean? Like for my peace of mind. But it made a difference to someone else. And like, I can't tell you how many times that's happened, you know, for me, where I've seen someone and they've just knocked out of the park. And like, I feel like, you know, renewed almost, whether that's something that, you know, gave me more, you know, a deeper knowledge and understanding of someone outside myself, or was something that was just like reflective of who I am or how I'd been feeling or an experience I had. Like, it's really beautiful. And I think the more people, you know, open themselves to those kinds of experiences, the better off everybody will be. You know, I think that a lack of understanding is, you know, 90% of the problems that we have in America.
Yeah, it's feeling like we're being seen or seeing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Candace, I want to give a little bit more attention to your work in the community and help our listeners understand a little bit more about how long you've been online.
Sure.
And what all you've got going on out there. Because I know it's not just TTRPGs. The whole Candace the Magnificent experience to me is so much, you know, to be experienced. And I want to make sure you get a chance to talk about what it is that's going on out there.
Of course. Yeah. I'm a very, I like to stay busy. I took a little bit of a hiatus from streaming for a little bit, but I think I'm ramping back up. I do TTRPGs. I've been streaming TTRPGs now. It'll be 2 years in January since my very first actual play. I've done over 50 of them, I believe. Nice. 50 episodes of things. Yeah. And like interviews and just awesome TTRPG experiences. Like I've met so many amazing people, including the two of you. I've gotten to play some fantastic games. I've had some great experiences. I've had some not great experiences, but to me, that's like kind of like, I mean, everything kind of has an, oh my gosh, it's so great. And I wish that could have been better. Right. Everything kind of has to have that. Totally. You have to have the good to get the bad, and then vice versa. And like you grow, you know, and that's to me, like that's huge, is growth. I'm always looking to grow and to educate myself, whether it's TTRPGs or just life in general. So you can find me at Candace the Magnificent pretty much everywhere except for Twitter. That's going to be at that Candace girl. And you can catch up with all the stuff that I do. It's excessive right now. On Thursdays, I'm over at K Damphir's Twitch channel doing Godplane, which is a D&D 5e homebrew horror adventure that she and Full Rubber Ducky co-wrote. They both are very talented co-DMs with K leading the story. And so far, that's been amazing. I play a minotaur named Bo Astrius that builds buildings. She's a mason.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm over at Carrie Smith's channel quite frequently as well. We have some stuff coming out soon that hasn't been announced yet. So mum's the word, I guess. Nice. I'm going to be on Transplanar for a Shoot Your One Shot episode. It's going to be on the 25th of October. So very excited for that. They are an amazing all queer, mostly BIPOC production. Please definitely check them out if you haven't seen them. I've done some work with Maddie Matihi as well for their channel. They did a really cute Cult of the Lamb one shot that was a homebrew the other day. And then I'm going to be gaming with D'Angelo as well. I have a D&D adventure with D'Angelo on the 16th. I have a show with Jess the Human as well, 10 Candles. So yeah, very busy. And I'm also trying to like put my own stuff on my channel as well. I'm really trying to get it together.
So we still have some time. Tell us about that. I know that I want to bring up, if I may, your ice cream reviews.
Absolutely. Okay, so over on my YouTube, I like weird ice cream flavors. I'm not like a, but okay, listen, I love mint chocolate chip. That's my favorite ice cream of all time. But preferably the green kind. But I do, I just really like a strange and unusual flavor. So I started doing some reviews of weird ice cream flavors. I have been a little bit behind, but I have a freezer full of ice cream right now as we speak that I really need to review. Yeah. So be on the lookout for that. You can watch the first four. I do an everything bagel, a maple soaked pancakes, a sweet roti and ghee, and a sun popped corn over on YouTube right now. And then on my Twitch channel, I'll be doing some Lego streams. I love Legos, so you'll be watching me put together some Legos. I also do some video gaming streams. I'm going to try and do scary stuff this month, even though I'm a chicken when it comes to video games. so it'll probably be more spoopy stuff than like really creepy stuff. And then I also do, I play the ukulele and I like to sing and I like to write cover songs.
Right.
So amazing. You can often catch me on Twitch doing cover cover songs. I recently did one for like a 90s rock night. But this month, I'm only going to be doing spooky songs. So come by if you're interested in hearing some Halloween jams. I might do some horror movie soundtrack stuff as well. Maybe Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, yes. Nice.
You know, yeah. I offered to run a Rocky Horror Picture Show themed Call of Cthulhu.
Oh my God, please.
I know, I want to do that. I honestly don't know when I'm going to have time. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but that's on my to-do list.
Yeah, I totally feel that too. Like, I was able to submit to try to be an Ennies judge this summer, and I won. Yes. And I'm one of, I believe, five, I think there's five of us judges. And part of the job is that you get an influx of stuff to your house and to your inbox to read and review. And it's been really intense so far, but like apparently things really pick up at the beginning of the year. So I'm trying to like make sure that I can stream and like do a bunch of fun stuff before like the beginning of 2023 comes and I'm just buried under piles and piles of TTRPG books and unable to get out.
Tell us a little bit more about that. Like, what is there any, safe behind the scenes stuff you can share with us about what it's like to be an Ennies judge? And for the audience, for those who don't know, Ennies is the major award for independent tabletop roleplay game designers, correct?
Yes, yes. So like Dungeons and Dragons and Paizo and all them, they could submit. I heard that they just don't because like they're so big, they don't really need to. Like people are already looking at their stuff. This is more for people who would like to be, you know, considered for this very prestigious award. And it's all fan run. So there's no like big organization behind it or anything like that. There's like the people who run the Ennies are the people that like I meet with once a month to talk about, you know, our opinions on what we've received so far. Everybody was super duper nice. There are people who have been judges before and, you know, I think one or two newbies like myself. So far it's been a really fulfilling experience. If you are somebody who enjoys reading, first of all, if you don't like reading, just don't even think about it. But if you enjoy reading, and you really love TTRPGs, it's a phenomenal experience. I love books. I have them all over my house. I can never have too many. So it's perfect for me. Although I heard last year they got like 700 submissions. So that's going to be crazy if that's how intense it's going to be this year. And it's interesting. Like so far I've gotten some things that have really turned my head. I've gotten some things that were just kind of okay. I've gotten some things that were somewhere in between. And it's kind of like too early to say like what I love and what I don't love, because like there's so many other things that are going to come. Right. And I think we have to whittle each category down to like 10 items or something like that for judging. So at this point, it's more like intake and early thoughts than it is like actual like judging. Right. And us talking about, you know, no, I think this belongs in this category and negotiating for, you know, what we really are excited by. But if you're somebody who really likes to read and you like paying very close attention to detail, you're good at explaining how you feel about something, why you do or do not like something, right? If you have a really good eye for that kind of thing, I definitely recommend putting your name in the hat for 2024's judge. Usually judges are announced at Gen Con, as well as all the winners for the 2023, like for the current year. That's all going to go down at Gen Con in 2023 in Indianapolis. And I believe applications. So if you're a game publisher, as long as it releases by, I believe, March, 2023 or April 2023, you can submit your product for review. Just reach out to the Ennies folks that have a website, any awards, I believe. I don't know if there's a space in there. But you can send your product in, and you know, I think you just kind of send a copy to each of the judges so that we can take a look at it. And then we have monthly meetings to discuss how we feel, things that we liked, what we don't like, et cetera. And if you are somebody who wants to be a judge, then I believe you can start throwing your name in the hat like a month and a half out, I believe, like maybe June, because I think July is when voting happens. So May, June of 2023, if you're interested in being a judge, like definitely take a look online. Again, it's all fan run. So, you know, it's a volunteer position. Like we don't get paid or anything like that. But for me, like I am such a nerd that I am more than willing to be paid in books.
Right. As I said, you get to keep all the stuff, right?
So if you want to, you can keep all the stuff. Like right away, I can tell you, not everything is up my alley. Like there's, just because something isn't up my alley doesn't mean it's not good, right? It might be great, mm-hmm. but I'm, you know, if I'm never going to play, you know, this game about, you know, dancing bears, let's say, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, that's not true. I would totally play a game about dancing bears. But bad example, but you know what I mean? If there's right. something that I'm just like, that's not for me. We have the option of sending it back so that, you know, it could be raffled or given away as like a community copy and things like that. So there's like some nice back end stuff there to kind of like keep the, keep things moving and keep the organization going strong. And again, the people who run it have been so kind and so nice. And it's lovely to be kind of behind the scenes on this, especially because I mean, Dungeons and Dragons is great, right? I'm a big Savage Worlds person. Honestly, that's probably my favorite system. Okay. Savage Worlds, like I love the edge and hindrance kind of deal, because it yeah. really helps you like shape your character and gives you something to hold fast to more so than alignment. Because alignment should be changeable. You know, you're not always going to be like
right.
chaotic evil, right?
Like, sure.
If being chaotic evil is sparing a child, right? Like, instead of like just eating his bones, right? Then you really, you know, you don't have a lot of leeway there. But in Savage Worlds, you can be bloodthirsty, which means like I take no prisoners, right? I just, you sure. know. That's just not my vibe. And like, that's fine, right? It's different than kind of a blanket statement, which I really appreciate. But I really love indies. Like indies have just captured my heart and my thoughts so much. Especially because they tend to be more focused, because they're smaller, which means that you don't have a bunch of people trying to kind of like, you know, figure out what is and is not appropriate, what will and will not work, right? You've got like maybe three or four people on a team, maximum like 10 people, right, on a team working on a book, figuring mm-hmm. out, you know, what should go in there, what shouldn't, you know? And I think that that's when you get like really interesting and unique stories. Like I've seen some indies, you know, that are not being judged this year, but that I've been able to play, that have just really, you know, stood out. Like Merkborg, right? Like that's a crazy, ridiculous system. Yeah. And the book itself is a work of art. Like it's yeah. crazy, right? And it just blows my mind. It's so different from running like Dungeons and Dragons or running, you know, Savage Worlds or something that's a little bit more, I guess mainstream might not be the right word, but
I don't know. That's what came to mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's very different than that vibe. Mm-hmm. But it's still very gratifying. And I find that it helps too, to kind of open people up. Like I tried running a game for my mom. I'm trying to get her into role playing if I can, because she's the one who taught me how to like use my imagination the way that I do. And like I'm arguably known for showing up places with ridiculous costumes on. I do tend to dress up. Yeah. And I get that from her. Like she used to make me Halloween costumes every year. I mean, still would if I needed one. And sometimes I do. Like she made me a serape, like a little cape for one of my early TTRPGs that I did. So she's like hugely supportive of me dressing up. And I'm trying to get her excited about TTRPGs, especially because my brother is a DM as well. My brother wrote a whole Dungeons and Dragons campaign for his friends. And so I'm not the only one in my family that likes it. So we've both been trying to kind of like work on how to like get my mom into it. So I started running Dread for her, because I was like, you know, the dice might be kind of a hindrance for her. Like that might be difficult to like understand. Like, oh, you get a +5 to that because you have this score in right. Constitution, and that trickles down to, you know what I mean? Like it gets real mathy. Yeah. And I was like, she's gonna fall asleep. She's gonna hate that. So I was like, this is a Jenga tower. What could go wrong? And what went wrong is that she got really, really invested in an NPC. And I was like, oh, classic. Man, I made him too interesting. She was like, what's going on with him? Is he up to no good? Where should we leave him? We need to find the perfect place for his body. Oh, I don't mean his body. He's not dead yet. I'm like, what are you doing? Are you going to kill him? You're nefarious. Oh, no. How did this happen? My sweet mom.
You know what? Now I want to run Nuevarden for your mom.
Please, because she could really use it.
I'll do it.
Like, it immediately got like bloody. It was like, she was like, he's a liability. He's clearly been bitten by something. We need to leave him. I was like, whoa, he knows, he has the direction. She's like, I don't care. I'll find my way out of this gorge somehow. I was like, okay, fine.
You've well, I will throw out there, speaking of Nuevarden, that is something that we're also trying to get you at the table for.
Please.
We keep having these near misses, but we're going to get there.
Yes, we are working our way toward it. I can't wait. I'm so, so excited. Like I said, it made quite the impression the first time I watched you guys' game.
Thank you.
I think it was a two-parter, right?
That was probably the one that was on Moonbounce,
That was a really good table because Toffee was spectacular.
Yes.
Matihi was great. Like, just really great all around. Such a pleasure.
Matihi and Aaron's character interplay was so much fun.
It was so cute. Blast. I loved it so much. Yeah, I can't wait.
Well, remind us again where people can find you, because I don't want them to miss out on those opportunities, those ice creams and all of the amazing. And speaking of the dress up and the cosplay, I see what you're talking about, because your costumes are always on point. You, and Kate, Kay is amazing. Kay Danfier's stuff is...
Oh, yeah.
Outrageously wonderful as well.
They go extremely hard on dress up as well, which I very much admire about her.
Yes.
Totally floats my boat when I show up and I'm not the only person that looks crazy. It's great.
Yes.
Yeah. So
you can find me at that Candace girl on Twitter, which is where I'm going to probably post most of the stuff saying, hey, look over here. So please feel free to keep up with me there. And then on YouTube, Instagram and Twitch, it's at Candace the Magnificent, all one word. So Candace the Magnificent.
Wonderful. Aaron, did you have anything that's been hovering in your thought processes there that you wanted to?
Nope, nothing for the way out this time.
All right. Candace, thanks a million for joining us. It's been a fantastic conversation. I feel like we could do this all night.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. Like, it's been such a pleasure talking to you both. And I very much look forward to being able to game with you as well.
Yes, absolutely.